So, Joe, can you describe the immediate effect that the state's building and home reacquisition process had on the Troy neighborhoods caught in the middle of the proposed arterials corridor?
Yeah, the acquisitions for the proposed arterial started in 1967 in Troy. They started earlier on the Maplewood side, and it had an electric effect. The manner of acquisition was later, and I'll talk about that in subsequent sections. But there was a lot of things they did that were very unfair, very high-handed attitude, very arrogant attitude toward acquisition. Take it or leave it. No third-party appraisals. They basically paid people for houses they didn't want to sell at what they determined to be the market price. And, quite frankly, I think if the government says to you, you got to get out of your house, they need to cover all of your expenses and treat you properly instead of just say, well, this is the bargain sale price for your house. Take this. A lot of people sold their houses and spent the rest of their lives as renters because they were never given enough money to buy a comparable house in a different neighborhood. So it was very bad, and in the specific areas they acquired, to this day, most of those areas are empty. In and around Congress Street, they
Wow.
even acquired Uncle Sam's house, the house that Sam Wilson lived in,
The original Uncle Sam, yeah.
the original Uncle Sam. And but the neighborhood put up a fight. And they joined. TAP was created in 1968, and came up with plans for an arterial. They thought the arterial at the time, they thought it was inevitable, so they offered their own plan, which took a remarkably different number of houses. The original proposal from the state knocked down 469 buildings. The TAP plan knocked down 64. The original New York State plan displaced 650 families, and the TAP plan would have knocked down 78. So there was a big fight, and all of a sudden the state started losing. The county legislature, the county planning department, the city council, they all changed their minds. They said, "This is not. You don't have to maim our city like this to build a traffic corridor." They were looking for redesign. That's probably part of the other reason the state got less interested in building the arterial. At any rate, when they came out with their plan, it was too late. The state had acquired most of the property, and in fact, some of the people who were worst hurt were ones that were left with property that was almost worthless, but they sold it to whoever they could later. Yeah, it destroyed two whole sections of neighborhood, one on 7th and 8th between Hoosick and Jacob, and one in South Troy to the east of Hill Street, from Congress to about Adams Street. And they just denuded that whole property, and in the end, the road was never built.
Such a devastating plan just for nothing to come out of it, you know?
Matt, the key thing they did that was just an affront to common sense is they had a hearing to define the corridor, but they didn't have all their approvals in place. And they went ahead and started acquiring houses and tearing them down before they had everything all locked up. And then they abandoned the plan.
That's unfortunate. Just bureaucratic greed at that point.
Lot of people still bitter about that.
And what became of these neighborhoods that were reacquired and eventually abandoned? Have they recovered in the now, like 40, 50 years later?
Things have happened in there that good things happened with the vacant land, but no thanks to the Department of Transportation, and at a much later date. Community Gardens runs a nice program at 8th and Hoosick. It's a large community garden, and they have greenhouses, and they train kids in from high school. They give them some training in doing food related work, and I think that's a very good use of it. But still, much of it is still empty. It's not all community gardens. And down in South Troy, there are some houses that have been built back in. A couple of habitat houses were built, but mostly that whole area is still. If you are on Hill Street, Hill Street, and you make a left-hand turn and head east up the hill, you'll still see empty blocks over there that have never been recovered. So again, as I say, I think more than half of the land that was acquired for those purposes, the whole section of Conger Street is empty that used to be, that was acquired for that stuff.
Wow.
Great. Okay.
So 1968 was a big year with the entire North-South Arterial and the Hoosick Street Bridge development. Can you elaborate a bit what went on during this 1 year?
Yeah, 68 was a big year. I've already mentioned the neighborhood fight, the hillside Hill Street neighbors in opposition to the arterial started in 67, and in 68 TAP came along and came up with their proposal. So there was a lot of public debate about the road, and the tone shifted. So at that point, unbeknownst to anybody, the DOT was again revising its attitudes toward the project and leaning more and more towards making an interstate highway project out of the bridge, which meant the bridge had to be bigger, it had to have more lanes, and it had to have bigger ramps. Oh, wow. Because there were transportation standards that had to be met if you're going to qualify for interstate highway funds. And so that all happened with the bridge. And conversely, on the other hand, in 68, they were certainly not announcing that they weren't going to build an arterial, but the plans that came out in 1968, which were jaw-droppingly big bridge, had a corridor for the arterial, but it wasn't going to build any part of the arterial at that point. They said they're still going to do it, but they were not proposing to do it at that point. It wasn't on the table. And that was the beginning of the big fadeaway. Less and less did anybody talk about the arterial, but it was several years before they ever got to a point where I read a draft of a report that had the words in it that there is no need for a highway on the Troy side, which was somewhat gratifying, but more grating than anything else. So instead, in 1968, they came out with this plan. And again, I hope people will take a chance to an opportunity to take a look at the article, because it has graphics that show how big that proposal was in 1968. From there, that's really the next section we're going to dive into, which is 1968, where the nature of the battle changes, because a lot of environmental regulations went into effect to combat the abuses that had occurred in the period from the early 60s to that point. The opponents had a lot more weapons to deal with in fighting it, and the new target for debate was the 8-lane Hoosick Street Bridge.
Mm-hmm. All right, Joe Fama, thank you so much.
My pleasure, Matthew.
This is the first segment of 3 or 4 or so covering the Hoosick Street Bridge and its history in Troy. This is a bridge that everyone in Troy at least one point has driven over. So it's good to have you here and explaining like how it came to fruition and all the bureaucratic nonsense that went into this development of the bridge.
And I have to say, Matthew, it's not an unusual story. It's a very usual story of what happened during that time. there are a lot of lessons to be learned about how things happen. And you really have to get out ahead of them. But once they get rolling, they're going to tear your neighborhood down, whether the road gets built or not.
Yep. Got to learn from our mistakes somehow.
Somehow.
All right, Joe Fama, again, thank you for being present for this interview. This is the first in a mini-series of three. This first interview covered 1954 to 1968. And the next one, which would air in about a week and a half or so, will cover 1969 to 1974.
Very good.
Excited for this, Joe. Thanks again for coming.
Thank you, Matt.
Great day.